Okay, we're gonna. It says on the top, we're going to start looking at 1 and 2 Samuel. just pray we make it through this whole thing. There's a lot of stories. It's long. I mean, it's kind of giving it a negative. There's a lot of cool stories here. But it's going to take some time. And what I did here, what I drew, and above there's like a triple line. Look above that first. What I kind of wanted to put this in context so that you understand where we are. And I drew a little arrow where Samuel starts, okay? The first part is kind of putting it in context. 1 and 2 Samuel is really about Saul and David, okay? Solomon doesn't start till later. Saul reigned for 40 years, David for 40 years, Solomon for 40 years. And in the middle of, or kind of near the beginning of Solomon's reign, is when the nation split in two. The northern tribes went to Jeroboam, the southern tribes went to Rehoboam. And when you read histories of the Old Testament, I mean, it gets a little bit kind of confusing because they call the whole nation Israel, but then they split. And they split over, believe it or not, taxes. The northern tribes didn't want to send all their money down to Jerusalem to support the temple. So they said, we're splitting. And then that's when the prophets take over. And through the kings, you read about all the bad kings in Israel that led Israel, the northern tribes, astray. Eventually went into captivity with Babylon. Judah was a little better, but they eventually went into captivity with Assyria. And I have that underneath that it says United Kingdom, and then after when they split, obviously they were called a divided kingdom. Just under that are these boxes that kind of show where the books that we're going to be looking at, what time they refer to. 1 and 2 Samuel are during the United Kingdom. 1 Chronicles kind of is the same time period as 2 Samuel. 2 Chronicles takes in all of 1 and 2 Kings, and then you see where 1 and 2 Kings lands. That kind of puts the books in context. Below that bold line is where 1 Samuel takes place. The total number of years, and it depends on what commentary you look at, it's anywhere between 120 to 150 years. You know, I don't know how they get what happened to the 30 years in between, but it's approximately 150 years total from the birth of Samuel to the the death of David. I show it at the end, really occurs in 1 Kings. So 1 Samuel basically starts with the birth of Samuel and ends with the death of Saul, okay? And you're going to recognize a lot of the stories in there, stories that you've heard, you know. I mean, the story of David and Goliath, there's probably not a person on the planet that hasn't heard that. I don't care who you are. They use it in everything. They use it in secular world about, you know, standing up to your Goliath. And I think there's another whole purpose to that. And when you read it, and I would encourage you to read it. I know it's, I know it gets a little bit, I was reading for 2.5 hours yesterday, and when I got up, my eyes were like, my old eyes couldn't focus anymore. But sit down and read 2 or 3 chapters at a time and just listen to some of the stuff. You will be amazed at how what God will reveal in this, okay? So I would encourage you to read it. That's 1 Samuel. It goes from the birth of Samuel to the death of Saul. 2 Samuel picks up where when Saul dies, David becomes king. And 2 Samuel goes from David as king to basically when he purchases land to build an altar, and it becomes Jerusalem. That land then becomes Jerusalem. And then later on in 1 Kings, and read 1 Kings, it's kind of a chapter 2 where it talks about David when he dies. It's really kind of a poignant story. So the idea behind these are called the historical books. But there's more to it than just history. I mean, it's not like and I was reading Ravi Zacharias, and he talks about how, you know, Americans kind of have lost our sense of history and where we came from. And whenever you read history, I'm not a real history buff. Is anybody a real history buff here? So, you know, Gary Inrig was like a maniac with history, and he could quote stuff from I mean, I can't remember yesterday, let alone history. So, but as we go through this, it's more than just history, and it's more than just a chronicling of what happened to Samuel, Saul, and David. It's really more than that, okay? It is that, but it's more than just history. And it's not going to include every event. You know, no history would ever really, that's why you got so many history books, they don't include every event, okay? So there's, but it is in a sense chronological. There will be questions. I mean, when I've read through this and I'm like, what? So if you get to that point and you read it and you go, what is that about? Pull out a commentary or come on Sunday. Hopefully I might have an answer. But read it. But below that last line, this is really what I think the book of 1 and 2 Samuel, who in the Hebrew Bible, it was one book. Okay, they didn't break it up into 1 and 2 Samuel. I think the Septuagint, when they translated the Hebrew Bible into Greek, they split it up into two books because there was a real good break at the death of Saul. What I'm trying to show there, and I don't know if you understand my little graphic there, there are two bookends in the book of 1 and 2 Samuel. The first one is Hannah's prayer, and we're going to look at it briefly this morning. It's in 1 Samuel chapter 2, verses 1 through 10. Then there's David's prayer and song at the very end of 2 Samuel. And it's his prayer, and it actually, if you read Psalm 18, it's almost identical to Psalm 18, okay? And it's that, let me just turn to it, because it's kind of funny that it occurs at the very end of 2 Samuel, because that's not when it happened. If you look at chapter 22 of 2 Samuel, you don't have to turn there, but it's the first verse. It says, "And David spoke the words of this song to the Lord in the day that the Lord delivered him from the hand of all his enemies and from the hand of Saul." So the writers, we're not really sure who all the writers are. Most people think there might have been more than one. A lot of people think Samuel wrote most of it, but he couldn't write all of it because he died in it. Okay, so then. But they put, yeah, it would be hard to write then. But they put the authors put David's song at the very end, and it's like, why would they do that? Because he sang this song after he was delivered from the hand of Saul, and we're gonna read those. And essentially, what I think 1 and 2 Samuel is about, and it's kind of amazing the songs we sang today about God being our King. Because that's what 1 and 2 Samuel is about. It is the stories of how God established the monarchy and who really is the king of Israel and the king of this world. And that's what those two songs are about. And it's also funny that Alan and I, we didn't plan this, quoted a lady that said, you know, Am I Shiver on the Rock? Wait till you listen to Hannah's song. The 1 and 2 Samuel talks about the stories of Saul and David and Samuel. But the real king is our God, is Yahweh. That's what this thing is, the story is about. And when I wrote on there, arrogance/humility, there's a sense when you read about Saul, and he came into it fairly humble. What happens? What happens to Saul? I mean, you'll find you probably know the story. He becomes very arrogant. And then when you look at David comes throughout his life. Really, throughout his life, in spite of his downturns and his major fall, he remained a man after God's own heart. There was humility there. There's this sense that we learn that we, as not just Israel, the world needs to understand who the king is. And it's Yahweh, not us. It's not the Republicans, not the Democrats, not. And I don't want us to. We got to be careful applying this to America, or you know. I mean, I want to be careful with that. But we learn lessons of the downfall and the humility of men that become arrogant. What do people hate most? I'm reading it in Ravi Zacharias. I'm reading about six books at the same time, so I get a little confused about where I get it all. But he talks about how the church doesn't, we can't be self-righteous and arrogant. God saved me. No, God is king, and I came to the king. I want to get into Hannah's song in a minute. But let me, so as I go through this, just the kind of simple background, most people, they're really unsure who wrote it. Probably part of it was written by Samuel, but they're obviously you couldn't write all of it. We talked about that. The date is about 1120 B.C. It was after the period of the judges. This, you know, the period of the judges with this, and I think we've gone through judges, where this seven cycles of, you know, oh, they would repent and come back to God, and then they would fall again, and this whole cycle was repeated over and over and over again in the judges, to the point where when you begin the book of Samuel, they're like, God saves the nation of Israel. Because if God hadn't provided Samuel and hadn't provided Saul and David, the nation would have been ruined. Okay? So it comes right after the end of that. Samuel is kind of this, not kind of, he's a transitional figure. He's a judge, because he comes at the end of the judges, but he's also kind of he becomes a priest. And there's a whole, you read the commentaries, isn't really from the tribe of Levi, so he's not technically a priest, but he acts as a priest in the book. We'll get into the story when Saul couldn't wait for him for a sacrifice. So he's a judge. He's kind of a transitional figure from the time of the judges. He's a priest to, and I wrote down here, a kingmaker. Well, he's really a king anointer. It was God who appointed the kings. It was Saul who anointed them and said, okay, Samuel anointed Saul and anointed David. I'm going to, just if I mix up the names, just yell or whatever. When we get to this point, the nation is a mess. We'll read it briefly about Eli and his corrupt sons, Hophni and Phinehas. The nation is in trouble. It is struggling. It doesn't know what to do. The very priests that they're supposed to come to are corrupt, stealing sacrifices. They're in a bad time. Remember in Judges, the verses, and they lived at a time when every man did what was right in his own eyes. You know, we may think our country's in trouble, but, you know, and think if everybody did what was right in his own eyes. That's where they were. And God is about to redeem the nation. And I've said, as you read through a lot of the commentaries, the purpose is that it's a history of the beginning of the monarchy. And this whole thing of, I remember Gary Inrig was from Canada, and he said, you know, you Americans really don't understand the whole idea of kingdom. He said, when you're from Canada, they have a king and queen, another in England, but they think of the monarchy. I mean, and I got to tell you, when I watch the Olympics and you see is it odd to anybody else? I mean, doesn't it seem odd that they treat the king and queen like that? It's like, and they don't do anything, I guess, do they? I mean, the king and queen really don't do anything except walk around and pontificate, I guess. I don't know. But Gary says, but there's this sense of king, of you worship, you honor the king. Now, some people think, we won't talk about what people think about kings in our country, but we don't have a king. we elect ours. In Israel, they chose to have a king. And I know well, we'll get to that. There's about God said, you really don't want to do this. I'm telling you, this ain't going to be real good. So anyway, as you go through this, when you read the commentaries, there's actually, and this friend of mine now kind of is in this camp, there's this thing called source criticism. Since we aren't sure who wrote it, they say, well, they got it from a bunch of different sources and a bunch of different authors, and they really invented David. They're saying, now, I don't know if you've seen where they find like a scroll, or they find a rock or something that has the name engraved on it, King David, and they're like, oh, they're shocked. You know, I mean, because there's people that think King David was invented by the authors. Because he's so amazingly, like, a Renaissance man before there was such a thing, you know. So there are people that think he was an invention of Israel. We don't believe that. I mean, I don't believe that. In the book, let's see. I talked about these bookends, that the earthly kings are subject to Yahweh. They're subject to the real king of Israel. And don't be arrogant. That's the point of the, don't become arrogant. Humble yourself before the king, the real king, our God, Yahweh. It's kind of interesting that we sang songs about that, about the king, this morning. And then there's this, as you read through it, the narrative, there's several ways to interpret it. There's this universal way to interpret it as these are God's work in creation. There's a national kind of interpretation. It's God's redemptive work in Israel. You know, that it's God's work through the nation of Israel in 1 and 2 Samuel. Then there's you get into the whole individual interpretation when you look at each person. You look at Samuel and you look at Saul and you look at David and look at how God worked in each one of their lives, okay? So that's kind of an overview. Let's look at, I don't know how much I can get through this. Let's look at the first chapter, verses 1 through 8. It kind of explains the situation that they're in. Let me read it. It says, now there was a certain man from and I wish I actually have Steve pronounce these for me. He's way better at it. Ramathaim, Zophim, from the hill country of Ephraim. And his name was Elkanah, the son of Jeroham, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zupha, an Ephraimite. And he had two wives. The name of the one was Hannah. The name of the other was Peniah. And Peniah had children, but Hannah had no children. Now this man would go up from his city yearly to worship and to sacrifice to the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were priests to the Lord there. And when the day came when Elkanah sacrificed, he would give portions to Peniah his wife and to all her sons and her daughters. But to Hannah he would give a double portion, for he loved Hannah. But the Lord had closed her womb. Her rival, however, would provoke her bitterly, irritate her, because the Lord had closed her womb. And it happened year after year, as often as she went up to the house of the Lord, that she would provoke her. So she wept and would not eat. Then Elkanah said, her husband said to her, Hannah, why do you weep and why do you not eat? And why is your heart sad? Am I not better to you than 10 sons? Husbands, never ask your wife that. Because you might not like the answer. But there's, you can, just when you read it out loud, you get this sense of, oh, there's trouble. You know, this is, the reading of it and that Hannah, year after year after year, wept over this. And then, verses 9 through 18, it starts to pick up. It's a sad, I mean, when, let me read 9 through 18. Then Hannah rose after eating and drinking in Shiloh. Now Eli the priest was sitting on the seat by the doorstep of the temple of the Lord. And she, greatly distressed, prayed to the Lord and wept bitterly. So here's Eli, whose sons are not great. We'll find that out in a little bit. And he's sitting by the door, and here's Hannah crying her eyes out. And again, applying this, I mean, are there times when you just got to get in front of God and cry and say, well, let's read what she says. And she made a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if thou will indeed look on the affliction of your maidservant and remember me and not forget your maidservant, but will give your maidservant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and a razor will never come on his head. Now it came about as she continued praying before the Lord that Eli was watching her mouth. As for Hannah, she was speaking in her heart, only her lips were moving, and her voice was not heard. So Eli thought she was drunk. I mean, think of those days that you could be in front of the priest and the priest thinks you're coming to the temple drunk. I mean, you know, it's an interesting scenario. And then Eli said to her, well, how long will you make yourself drunk? Put away your wine from you. What are you doing? You don't come to the temple drunk. But Hannah answered and said, No, my Lord, I am a woman oppressed in spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I have poured out my soul before the Lord. Do not consider your maidservant as a worthless woman, for I have spoken until now, but now my great concern, now out of my great concern and provocation. Then Eli answered and said, well, go in peace, and may God of Israel grant your petition that you have asked of him. Did she tell him the petition? No. I mean, it's kind of, you know, that's why sometimes when I think, when we have a prayer time and I talk about unspoken requests, there are tons of this going on in our very room. Hannah never said to him, you know, my husband's other wife has given me trouble and I don't. Never said it. He just said, okay, go in peace. May the God of Israel grant your petition that you have asked of him. And he said, let your maidservants find favor in your sight. So the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. I mean, the emotions in this book, as you read through it, the emotions in this book are just all over the place. She goes from this weeping, sad struggle before God. And it doesn't, you know, this was her struggle. You know, I mean, we all have different struggles that we come before God with that we might not ever want to say and put up on the screen. Remember this verse where Eli looks at her and says, go in peace. May the God of Israel grant your request. Doesn't have to be voiced. It doesn't have to go up on the screen. God is king. That's the point. And you see a movement from the book of Judges that was just this awful time to where God is moving, and people, was always a remnant, and there will be a remnant of people that just trust him, that understand God is king and not me. And then it's It's interesting, her vow. It's kind of like, you know, she said, give me a son and I'm giving them back. There is a sense that our kids aren't ours, ever. We'd like to think they are, but they're not. I don't want to misapply this, but there is a sense that they're not ours. And he's, later on in the book, you'll find out she had five more kids. So, not the only one. And this was a joke. Meyer used to say, if you want to have three perfect kids, have five, throw away the first one and the last one, and you'll have the three perfect ones in the middle. And I'm a last born, and so I kind of get offended by that, but it was funny when he said it. But Hannah really did give up her first one. Verse 18 through 23, let me read this. And this is about her Samuel's birth. Then they arose early in the morning and worshiped before the Lord and returned again to their house in Ramah. And Elkanah had relations with Hannah, his wife, and the Lord remembered her. And it came about in due time, after Hannah had conceived, she gave birth to a son. And she named him Samuel, saying, because I have asked him of the Lord. What did you have your name mean? I'm an answer to prayer. It's kind of what she's called him. And then Elkanah went up with all his household to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and pay his vow. But Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, I will not go up until the child is weaned, and then I will bring him, that he may appear before the Lord and stay there forever. And Elkanah, her husband, said to her, do what seems best to you. Remain until you have weaned him. Only may the Lord confirm his word. So the woman remained and nursed her son until she weaned him. There's this sense that Elkanah was like, you made a promise. You know, are you really going to keep this promise? And she does. And I think this was, when you read the commentaries, there's this whole sense that you couldn't give him to her as a baby, as an infant, that he had to be weaned and old enough to understand kind of what's going on. But you, I mean, if you try to think of all the what ifs of this situation, you know, how'd you like to be Samuel? You know, and I remember, well, I don't want to read too much into it, but think of what Hannah is giving up. She didn't know that at this point she was going to have five other kids. This is like this is everything. She's given up everything. Because she knows, I want to get into her prayer in a minute. Then she sacrifices in verses 24 through 28. Now when she had weaned him, she took him up with her with a three-year-old bull and one ephah of flour and a jug of wine and brought him to the house of the Lord in Shiloh, although the child was young. And they slaughtered the bull and brought the boy to Eli. And she said, O my Lord, as your soul lives, my Lord, I am the woman who stood here beside you praying to the Lord. For this boy I prayed, and the Lord has given me my petition, which I asked of him. So I have dedicated him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he is dedicated to the Lord. When it talks about earlier where she said that he wouldn't shave his head, this was kind of a Nazarite vow, but it was the mom giving it to the boy. Usually it was, you know, we'll find out later, the Nazarite vow was Samson did one. But this was the mom doing it for the boy, which is kind of different. So also I have dedicated him to the Lord. Let's see. And he worshiped the Lord there. And then it's I'm going to read her song. And this is where most of the commentaries talk about when you listen to this song. David's song is about a chapter and a half long, so we won't read the whole thing. But these are the kind of the bookends of God taking the nation of Israel out of this, the cycles of the judges and saying, I'm going to be your king. And let me read it, because at the end, he's going to talk about the king of kings. That Hannah, well, let me read it first. It's really kind of cool. And Hannah prayed and said, "My heart exalts in the Lord. My horn is exalted in the Lord. My mouth speaks boldly against my enemies, because I rejoice in your salvation. There is no one holy like the Lord. Indeed, there is no one beside you, nor is there any rock like our God. Boast no more so very proudly." Who do you think she's talking about? Think the other wife, maybe? "Boast no more. Do not let arrogance come out of your mouth. For the Lord is a God of knowledge, and with him actions are weighed." Don't boast. God knows actions, not boasting. The bows of the mighty are shattered, but the feeble gird on strength. Those who were full hired themselves out for bread, but those who were hungry ceased to hunger. Even the barren give birth to seven. That was the perfect number. She didn't know yet what was about to happen, that she'd have five others. But she who has many children languishes. You can picture in her head the hurt from this other woman that gave her grief constantly. "The Lord kills and makes alive. He brings down to Sheol and he raises up. The Lord makes poor the rich. He brings low. He also exalts. He raises the poor from the dust. He lifts the needy from the ash heap to make them sit with nobles and inherit a seat of honor. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's. He has set the world on them. He keeps the feet of his godly ones, but the wicked ones are silenced in darkness. For not by might shall a man prevail. Those who contend with the Lord shall be shattered. Against them he will thunder in the heavens. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth. He will give strength to his king, and he will exalt the horn of his anointed." That word anointed is the word for Messiah. And I'm thinking, you know, when you were reading, when the nation of Israel was reading this, and they read, he shall exalt the horn of his anointed, I'm thinking, looking back, they were thinking, I'm thinking David. You know, the reality is, this song, the start of 1 Samuel, that ends with kind of the same song, is about the God of Israel. He is your king. He brings low the arrogant and raises up the poor. And he will exalt his Messiah. So when we read through this, and and I think it's 2 Samuel 7 is the covenant with David, where God says, your throne is going to last forever. And when you think about, when I think about people trying to eliminate David, if you eliminate David and say he was just a figment of the author's imagination, who else do you eliminate? The Messiah. There's this, and really, as you go through here, just read it. I mean, sometimes if you read it out loud or listen to it on tape, it's easier than your eyes don't go bad like mine did reading it. This is what the book is about. When we hear about Samuel and we hear about Hophni and Phinehas and we hear about Saul and you look at and God appointed him. God told Samuel who to pick. And the point is, it is God is our king. God answered Hannah's prayer. Not because of who Hannah was, but because of who he is. And at the end, when David is delivered from Saul, and it's at the end of 2 Samuel, David goes, "You're the king. You're the king." So that's what it's about as we go through there. Some of these stories will go verse by verse. Some of them we're going to have to take as chunks. We're not going to be able to read all of it because I'm not going to be able to read all the names. But hopefully don't take, like, do it one chapter at a time because we'll be here for a long, long time. But as we read through it, we're going to keep going back to the main point. It's just like the songs we sing. Someday, we're going to stand before that king. And we can go into the Holy of Holies because of the blood of his lamb that Hannah talked about in her song. And so, and this is coming from a worrier. So, whatever, you know, when we leave this place and we face Mondays and we face clients or students or tough things at work, remember Hannah's song. Who's the king? Who put you there? You know, I mean, I know, and I do believe that was my choices, and but God's the king. He's not surprised. He's not shocked that you're weeping. He can hear your cries of your heart. But he's the king. Let's pray. Father, as we face life, as we go into this world as individuals and kind of the struggles we may face, the tears we may cry. And remind us of Hannah's prayer. That you bring down the arrogant. You raise up the poor. You listen to the cries of people's hearts. And Father, sometimes we feel like prayers go unanswered or that heaven is silent at times. Father, remind us daily that you listen, that you care enough, that you showed the value of your creation, of us, when you sent your son. You kept your promise from ages past that one day you would set things right. Thanks for this time, and thanks for your word. Thanks for our church. And as we leave this place, just make us mindful of your presence with us throughout this week. It's in your son's name I pray. Amen.